Please welcome Ben Davis.
I'm doing two stories of cruelty because the first one is cruelty that happened to me that there's no good vengeance for. And the second is cruelty that happened to my grandfather, and he wrote the best letter ever. But I'm saving that for a second. My dad's second favorite joke. Guy is working in his office building. He looks out the window and he sees hanging on the glass trying to get in this massive mammoth gorilla snarling and drooling with foam bubbling in his teeth. And he keeps his calm and he gets his phone book. He looks up exterminator subsection gorilla. He calls the number. The voice says, meet me in front of the building in 10 minutes. 10 minutes later, he's down in front of the building. My dad has told this joke since before I was born. Exactly this way. Down in front of the building, a big van pulls up. It has a hydraulic extension ladder on top of it. On the side of the van is a gorilla with an X through it. The guy comes out of the van. He's big. He's got hairy forearms. And he's a big protruding jowl, whatever that is. And he looks like a gorilla himself. He's got an elephant shotgun cracked over his shoulder. Hanging off of his belt, he has a pair of manacle handcuffs, the kind that do the wrists and the ankles at the same time. And on a steel chain, he has a snarling, drooling pit bull. And he says, where's the gorilla? And the businessman points up to the gorilla hanging onto the glass, and the gorilla exterminator looks up. He does some calculations in his head. And he says, okay, I'll be able to help you with your gorilla problem, but I'm going to need your assistance. He says, well, what do I have to do? And he says, this is the plan. I will take the hydraulic extension ladder, I will put it up there next to the gorilla. I will climb up the ladder and I will wrestle with the gorilla. I will wrestle with the gorilla for a little bit and then I'm going to throw the gorilla to the ground. As soon as the gorilla hits the pavement, this dog was taken from its mother at 6 weeks and has been trained on impact to go immediately for the testicles. It will grab the gorilla by the testicles, and in a fit of pain and fury, the gorilla will throw his wrists and his feet towards his groin, at which point you will take the manacle handcuffs. You will put them on the gorilla. You will take the gorilla, and I will come down off of the ladder. The two of us will throw him in the back of the van, and I'm gone. And the businessman is like, I think I can help with this. I think I can help. I don't want to screw anything up. Let's come one more time. And he says, okay. Ladder up to the gorilla, wrestle with the gorilla. Throw the gorilla to the ground. Gorilla hits the ground. Dog trained since birth, goes for the nuts, hands down, handcuffs on, back of the van. I'm gone. And the businessman says to the gorilla exterminator, I can do it. I'm ready. I can do it. I can totally do it. I have a question. I noticed as soon as you got out of your van, you had this giant shotgun cracked over your shoulder. What is that all about? And the gorilla exterminator goes, I am so glad you asked me that. Look, if I'm up there wrestling with the gorilla and the gorilla throws me down, shoot the fucking dog. So it's my brother's wedding. It's the rehearsal dinner. There are 60 people at 6 round tables. Around one round table, there are 10 of us, the members of the wedding. My brother is at 12 o'clock next to his fiancée, Susan, and I am sitting at 6 o'clock directly across from Joshua. My father is at the table next to us with 10 other Davis relatives, and Susan, my future sister-in-law, is German and Swiss, and lots of people who don't speak English are in tables further on down the room. And it's a very sort of divided crowd for the rehearsal dinner. But I'm not thinking about that yet. All I'm thinking about is the 10 people at this table, and my brother Josh says, hey, Ben, tell a joke. And I say, okay, Josh, what joke would you like me to tell? And he says, you should tell one of Dad's jokes. And I say, well, Dad has two jokes. Which one of Dad's jokes should I tell? And he goes, tell the one with the gorilla is the one. And I look around the crowd now, and I'm thinking, it's not an appropriate time. This joke, I mean, I don't think either of Dad's jokes are really appropriate. And Josh says, what's wrong? There's nothing wrong with the gorilla joke. I mean, this, and it goes on for 5-10 minutes. It finally comes down to Josh looks me in the eye, and he says, Ben, it is my wedding. If you love me, you will tell the joke. And if anyone is offended, I will accept full responsibility. So I tell the joke. But as would happen, I start telling the joke, and it's just to the 10 members of the wedding. And so I'm just sort of keeping it low-key and quiet and everything. And but my dad hears his joke. So he picks up and has the whole table over there quiet down to listen to the joke. And slowly, even the tables that don't speak English notice that half of the room is silent. And by the time I get to the testicle part, I'm the only voice in the room. And I'm looking across the table at Josh, and Josh is just sitting there going. And I'm dying as I'm approaching. I'm thinking I could hedge the bet. I could say, shoot the darn dog. But the thing, my dad has always told the joke exactly that way, with almost exactly those words. And it's his joke, and Josh asked for it, and it's his wedding, and I love him, so I'm going to tell the joke. And I'm getting to the end of it, and I'm so glad that you asked me that question, because if I'm up there wrestling with that gorilla and the gorilla throws me down, shoot the fucking dog. It is completely silent. And my brother Josh, who the entire time has been going, registers the complete silence at the punchline of the joke that he requested. And I know I'm dead. He just looks at me, and I'm the one who's going to die. I have to die. And my brother draws breath and makes this kind of eye contact with me that says, just go along with this, Benjamin. As he says, that is not Dad's joke. And I say, excuse me, Josh? And this is still, now everybody is listening. Excuse me? Dad's joke is shoot the dang dog. That's Dad's joke. That is Dad's joke. It's not, why did you tell that joke, Benjamin? That is so inappropriate. Josh, you said if anybody was offended, I said what? This is my wedding, Benjamin. Why did you decide to tell that joke? And I just know I'm screwed and no one is talking. And my father is one table over. I don't think he even understands exactly what the conversation is going on, but I think he knows Benjamin is going down. So he rises like he's making a toast and he announces to the room. I have never in my life told that joke. Needless to say, the two Swiss cousin-in-laws that I was really doing well with, and there's no suitable, I just got fucked. So that's cruelty, and I wish I had the acumen of my grandfather, and this is my second story, and this is vengeance. Malcolm was one of my best friends, and has died, and I love him still, and he wrote, this is his second autobiography, and he wrote it in his early 80s. And he lived for 11 years in a condo on 309 East 49th Street in New York City. And he wrote this book, and he published it himself. He spent his own money, you know, like 1,000 copies. And he gave one copy to the concierge, and he put it on, asked him to keep it at the sort of entrance foyer to his condominium, along with these letters that basically I have copies of, but they were pretty straightforward, basically from the publication thing, dear resident, you may know, and it's, please, you know, if you're any interest in reading or buying this book, please call Malcolm Hoffman. Very, very lightweight stuff. And he got a letter from Miss Carolyn Hirschklau, who I have the letter here. The letter was given to Malcolm by the concierge, who slid the book that he had given to the concierge, along with the letter, back to my grandfather, who was as tall as me, but he spoke like this and was very intimidating and elegant and
genuine human being. And it was slid to him with this letter, which read, "Dear Malcolm," from Carolyn Hirschcloud, "Dear Malcolm, as you know, 309, the condominium, has never permitted soliciting of any kind. And the board has received complaints about your book-selling scheme. I am returning your book and sales promotion sheets to you. I know you will understand and appreciate the board's decision, Carolyn Hirschcloud." To which Malcolm replied, March 1st, 1995, "Dear Miss Hirschcloud, I have your note, in which, not unlike some well-known politicians of today, you propose to abrogate the Constitution of the United States. The facts are these. I wrote a book in hopes of general circulation. I thought it possible that my friends and neighbors at 309 East 49th Street might be eager to see the autobiography. As an owner of a piece of 309 East 49th Street for 8 years, I would hope that I have some friends there. I left a copy of the book with the concierge, who was instructed not to stuff the letters into the boxes of my friends and neighbors. No one, with my knowledge or consent, has urged them to buy the book. Almost every day, I find sales handouts in my letterbox, including this day. But fortunately, these do not deal with books. Nor is there anything so abominable, so destructive of civilization, founded on the computer byte, as a book containing words and pictures from the old school. Words well selected because of the clarity of meaning. You may call this solicitation, but I wonder how censorious the officers must be to snap at such gentle efforts. A book was returned to me by the concierge, sliding it across the counter in some disdain. Apparently, you have helped your critical position by converting letters into sales promotion sheets. Of course, if I had mailed these letters to my friends and neighbors, I do not suppose you would have tried to block circulation any more than you would have the sundry product ads and unknown newspapers and flyers which daily occupy my mailbox. I would not have written this letter to you if you had not referred to my book-selling scheme. How invidious a word is scheme. Here is a man, 82 years of age, who has lived in this house without any stirs or complaints of his friends and neighbors. Indeed, he has thought of it as much his home as the officers of the condominium, and that includes access to the public facilities and the concierge. This old rascal, who has spent most of the last 5 years of his life writing a book, has had the audacity to leave a copy of the book on the concierge's desk so that others could see it. The next thing you know, the concierge will show a copy of the Communist Manifesto to the 309ers. What an evil scheme this is! We should look in Hoffman's dark heart and see how terrible is the perfidy involved in causing the display of his book. Certainly that is part of a scheme. And it is interesting that on the very day in which you have so characterized his conduct, a 28-year-old man operating out of Shanghai was by a scheme able to wreck the Bank of England, adversely affect the stock market of three nations, and disappear without even a trace of how he operated his scheme. Scheme. Indeed, this is a word popular with prosecutors and uncouth persons who, without enlightenment and without compassion, like to pass judgment on their fellow beings. One knows you are not to be numbered among such persons. If this scheme reflects a conspiracy, then there must be multiple actors. On the surface, at least, the concierge is involved, because there was kept the book, which received some forbidden glances and casual complaints. I was told by a representative at the desk in an astonishingly imperious tone that I had sold one book, and that was enough. There was none sold. I do not know whether he was reporting your opinion, but I think you should instruct the concierge to deal with the owners of the condominium politely, lest they discover that even old people can maintain teeth that bite. Very truly yours, Malcolm Arthur.